This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. Doug Hamilton is on medical leave. Coming up in the second half of today's show, we learn about the upcoming Fargo Air Show. But we are going to start today with a show a little bit closer to Earth. Capital Shakespeare is going to be performing Julius Caesar, and we are here visiting today with the artistic director at Capital Shakespeare, Aaron Weichel. Aaron, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
And guest director Steve Grossman, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Aaron, after all of these hundreds of years, why is Shakespeare still a draw?
I think it's the passion with which he writes that draws people into his plays. We have taken the English language and pared it down to 120 characters or even just emojis, and he takes 5 pages to say, I love you. So it's the beauty of the language, and the stories are fairly timeless. Romeo and Juliet, of two people who shouldn't be in love but are. Shylock, who can't seem to catch a break, even though he's not a bad guy. And even the story of Julius Caesar, a man who goes after power and then gets assassinated, and the horrible things that follow along after that.
Steve, I mentioned you are the guest director. You have spent the last 2 months in Bismarck. You're here from Chicago, where you are very active in the theater scene, and you've been active in professional theater for decades. What made you want to come to Bismarck for Capital Shakespeare?
I came for the play, Julius Caesar. I would have gone almost anywhere to work on a production of that play at this moment in history.
Okay, why?
Well, the subject matter is political assassination and how unpredictable and dangerous a way that is to do politics. We had a political assassination just 2 weeks ago.
Right, in Haiti.
Yes, in Haiti. And this play is a warning that political assassination has unknowable consequences, frequently deadly and dangerous consequences.
Hmm. Aaron, this show, now last year, of course, was the pandemic, and I was on your website, and you did a number of digital performances.
Correct.
And then now we have a show with fighting scenes where you have to get right up in someone's face to stab them to death. So let's just talk about just the quick year-to-year comparison of Capital Shakespeare last year, Capital Shakespeare this year. Why did you want to go with this play?
We were actually scheduled to do this play last year and have Stephen come in last year as well. But the pandemic just threw all of that out the window. So this year, you know, with the readily, thankfully in North Dakota, the readily available vaccines and the number of our cast who are have been very cautious during all of this, we felt we were safe to move forward. And we've just made sure to take care of everybody and say, if you're sick, stay home. We don't want you here. But it's been so great to get back together, and the cast and crew have all said that it's just such a joy to finally do theater again and to be back to quote-unquote normal. We missed this. When you're an actor or a performer, theater is in your blood, and when you can't do it, you miss it.
Yeah. And these performances of Julius Caesar coming up July 21st through the 25th, 7 p.m. at the North Dakota Heritage Center and the State Museum Prairie Amphitheater. And, Steve, I want to talk about directing these, I mean, the whole play, of course, but especially the real dramatic fight scenes that are in this tragedy, this political assassination plot. What is your approach to really capturing that kind of atmosphere, especially when you still have to be somewhat mindful of pandemic protocols here?
This play is in two parts. We're doing it in two acts. The first act is a bunch of scheming men, greedy men, trying to conspire to kill Caesar. So the first act is a thriller full of cloak and dagger, secrets and schemes. The second act is a battle show. It is fighting. It all takes place on the battlefields in Eurasia. We haven't been hampered by COVID protocols in this production, at least not yet. Knock on wood.
But your approach to capturing that drama.
Well, Shakespeare is so good, and he is such a great storyteller that the play practically directs itself. And especially with the very capable actors that we have, they inhabit these characters, make them their own, and bring them to life. I encourage people to come see this show. It's going to be very well acted, and it's a great play. It's thrilling and beautiful to the ear, and it'll be a lot of fun.
What do you mean by beautiful to the ear?
Well, Shakespeare is a poet, and every line of this play, nearly every line is written in verse, to hear the play and to hear Shakespeare is a treat for the ear. It's like listening to music.
I'm going to put you on the spot. What are some of your favorite lines?
Well, there's so many famous lines in this play, but I guess Anthony's lines are my favorite. Oh, pardon me, thou bleeding piece of earth, that I am meek and gentle with these butchers. I love that passage, and we have a very strong actor playing Mark Antony, and he gives me shivers when he does that speech.
Yeah, even just when you said these butchers, you know, your voice, it immediately dropped a couple of octaves and, you know, slowed down, and it's just kind of, I think it's muscle memory for you at this point.
I think that's right.
Now, obviously, you said that you love this play. You would have traveled anywhere to do this one. How do you feel about Shakespeare's comedies? He wrote a lot of those, too.
I love Shakespeare. I think I've read all the plays. I love the comedies. Of course I do. Although I have a special affection for the tragedies.
Why?
Well, the great tragedies of Shakespeare take on great themes of life. Mm. Lear, Macbeth, Hamlet take up the greatest questions of human existence, life and death.
Aaron, I noticed on the website, now, of course, you're called Capital Shakespeare. You are performing a Shakespeare play every year, but also, you are doing a classic play. In this case, you're also doing Ibsen's A Doll's House. Why did you want to include non-Shakespeare plays at Capital Shakespeare?
We did A Doll's House this past March, and it was our first play back post-pandemic, and we loved that show. We decided a few years ago that we were ready to expand our season, and we knew we didn't. If we just did Shakespeare, there's a very limited amount of that. The man was prolific, but
but 37 plays.
Yeah.
There's only so many times you can do that.
And you can't really do all of the Henrys, and it's just hard. So we decided we wanted to start doing some theater that was maybe too complex, too heavy, too big, too whatever for some other companies to do, or that other companies had no interest in doing around town. And so we wanted to do some of these big classic plays and really dive into some modern language and still keep our tradition of bringing classic work. So this year, actually, this next March, we're going to be doing Death of a Salesman by Arthur Miller, who is my second favorite playwright to William Shakespeare. So we're really excited to work on that show, and that's just a huge play in the world of theater and in theater history. So it's going to be a beast to work on, but we're really excited to get a chance to do it. It hasn't been done in Bismarck for quite some time, so we're excited about that.
Well, you talked about modern language, and I'm thinking of things like Clueless, this movie that came out with Alicia Silverstone. I don't even know how long ago this is, but it's, you know, a decade and a half, maybe two decades old, loosely based on Jane Austen's novel Emma. This movie from 2006, She's the Man, where a young woman goes in to play soccer and she has to dress up like her brother because they don't have a girls' soccer team. It's supposedly a modern retelling of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night.
Correct.
And the language, of course, we don't call it Shakespearean English for no reason. I'm just curious if you both could kind of weigh in on your thinking about when to stay true to the bard's original language and when to adapt to more modern style of communicating. Steve, why don't you go ahead and go first?
Well, the first challenge with this play was cutting it to fit a finite time slot between 7 and 9 p.m. with intermission. And it's a long play. So, for starters, you have to trim the text.
I think we've done, with Capital Shakespeare, we've done plays in a more modern setting. We've done them in the traditional Elizabethan England settings. And the audience likes both. Sometimes they come to us and say, oh, that was really great when we did Macbeth in a post-apocalyptic setting, that my kids loved it and it made so much more sense to them that way. And it was funny because we were like, well, maybe this pandemic came through and it like destroyed a bunch of the world. And when we were talking about Macbeth, and then when we went through COVID-19, I was like, oh, no, it's my fault. But
a lot of people said that.
I know, right? But we find that the audience likes that variety. And that's what's brilliant about Shakespeare is his language and his, like Stephen was saying, his story themes are timeless. And you can do pretty much anything with it as long as you're consistent. That's where sometimes pulling it into a modern setting falls short, is the consistency of it. And so when we do our plays going forward, we try and rotate it around. We've done 1970s, we've done 1920s, we've done 1870s, and it's just how you approach it. And like Steve was saying with the cutting, you have to have that in mind when you're cutting, because cutting to keep it to Elizabethan is maybe a different lens than cutting for a 1920s comedy of errors version. So it's all on how you approach it and then how you physicalize within that and how you bring that language to life.
So, Steve, that cutting, is that something that you had to do, or is this a version of the play you can buy the rights to already?
No, I did the cutting myself.
Whoa.
I started, a year and a half ago for our first attempt to mount this play last summer. But I didn't make changes in his language because the beauty of his language is beyond compare.
So what was your approach to cutting it? I feel like I would not be brave enough to say, oh, Shakespeare, we're just going to cut this out.
I know. One has to be humble. Yes, it's audacious to cut Shakespeare. I cut things that I thought the audience wouldn't understand for reasons of language. And I cut passages that I felt were redundant and gave the audience information they already had. And I cut for pacing. I wanted the first act to go fast and the second act to go faster.
How many times have you ended up reading Julius Caesar then in some version or another?
I would say, without exaggeration, 100 times.
Wow. and it holds up every time. Aaron, do actors, directors have to do Shakespeare to be taken seriously?
I don't think they have to do Shakespeare to be taken seriously, but I think that if they do Shakespeare, they'll take themselves more seriously and they'll understand their abilities to take something that maybe not everybody will grasp right away, and it's on them as the actor to make it understandable. Hmm. There's language. Shakespeare invented words, mm-hmm. and he took words and—
Assassinate, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Is one of them.
Good for you. and he created his own rhythm and language, and so you have to be able to take that and translate it into a character and into an emotion and into a feeling so that maybe a 16-year-old kid whose vocabulary is good but not as big as Shakespeare's can understand what's happening and can understand why they're being asked to read this in school and why it's important. So I'm not one of those snobby people that's like, oh, if you don't do Shakespeare, you're not an actor. but I do believe that there's a reason he's hard. And the heart is good, and the heart is good for you as an actor and as an audience member to challenge your brain and to sit and decipher it. And it's like a foreign language. Once you get rolling in it and once you're working in it long enough, you don't hear the these and the thous and the dost anymore. you hear a character speaking. You hear Mark Antony lamenting the loss of a friend and a man who didn't deserve to die that way, as opposed to just hearing friends, Romans, countrymen. So that's what I love about Shakespeare, and that's why I love to do Shakespeare as a director and as an actor is that challenge, but I don't look down upon people who don't. But also if I do musical theater and people sometimes say, well, that's a weird combination. And I say, but is it really? Because Shakespeare is music, like Steve was saying, and it's this heightened language. And so is when you randomly break into song in a musical. So I feel that they're very intertwined. And if you can do a musical, you can do Shakespeare.
Hmm. Steve, as a director, what are the hallmarks? What makes somebody a Shakespearean actor?
That's an interesting question. When we held auditions for this play, I was mainly concerned, well, I was concerned with many things, but I was concerned with actors' diction, their ability to deliver words and lines with clarity and emotion.
I would imagine there's a bit of a physicality that comes even just in these soliloquies. I have zero experience Shakespeare at all, but just the few lines I know, I feel like my shoulders kind of, you know, embrace that inner linebacker. I kind of tense at the abs here and at the core, even to just think about projecting lines like a Shakespeare line.
Yes, well, it's difficult. We have some very strong speakers of Shakespearean lines in this cast. We've been working on delivering these lines, of course, now for 2 months. And the poetry is strong, the acting is strong, and the story is tremendous. I encourage everybody to come see this play.
Again, the performances are July 21st through the 25th at 7 p.m. at the Heritage Center in Bismarck. Aaron, how do you describe the theater scene in Bismarck?
It's hopping. It really is, especially in summer. Bismarck has 3 different summer theater opportunities. Sleepy Hollow, which does primarily musicals. Shade Tree, which does musicals and plays. And those are both for more younger actors, elementary through high school. And we're the only adult theater that performs during the summer. So it's nice to have that variety that you can go and do anything. And so there's lots of performances happening at the same time. But I think one thing that works in our favor is we're free. So even if you do go and pay to see another show, you can come to ours for free and sit and enjoy. And it's no skin off your back or ours.
It's free. It's free.
How are you able to do that? Where does the funding come from?
We are sponsored by a lot of different arts organizations, the North Dakota Council on the Arts, North Dakota's Humanities Council. Bismarck State College is a big sponsor in letting us rehearse in their space. We also have private donors who are very generous, some corporate sponsors. And we are free. We do shamelessly ask for donations. But if that's not possible, especially in this post-pandemic economic situation that many families are in, we understand that. If you can't give, that's great. If you can give $2, that's awesome too. But we're here to bring the love of Shakespeare to the entire community and to offer a theater experience to anyone and everyone that wants to come. So we'll make the money work as long as you keep coming to the shows.
How about the Young Bards program? This is aimed at young, aspiring actors. I think it's ages 12 to 17. What's your approach for these young actors? And is it as serious and as dramatic as many of the Shakespeare roles?
So I'm directing the Young Bards this year, and it's been a blast. They are a group of so talented young people. There's five of them this year. We had more, but some scheduling conflicts got in the way. So we have five kids, and we do five different scenes from five different Shakespeare shows. And we call it Shakespeare Our Way, because some of what we do might make Shakespeare roll over in his grave. But it's a great way for kids to get introduced to Shakespeare and to understand that it's not scary. It can be funny. Mm-hmm. We just have to maybe search a little bit more for some of that humor. So we do Romeo and Juliet in a bunch of different styles of acting. We do some scenes from Much Ado About Nothing. And the kids have a blast doing it. And the hope is that we can train them as young actors, and then they'll be able to step onto our main stage in our main stage production, and without having any reservations and without worrying of, oh, I've never done Shakespeare, I don't know how to do this. So while it is an experience for them, it's also a way for us to train new people in how to perform the works of William Shakespeare. So we keep it fun. We keep it light. They get to perform a green show, which is kind of like a pre-show to every performance of Julius Caesar, except on Sunday they get to do their own performance in the lovely air-conditioning Russell Reed Auditorium at the North Dakota Heritage Center at 2 o'clock. So there won't be a Young Bards in the evening that night, because they'll get their own show at 2 o'clock in the afternoon inside. And they're really excited for that, to have a shot on their own. So.
And Steve, just briefly, how would you compare the theater scene? You're most recently working in Chicago, but you have worked all over. How do you feel about the Bismarck theater scene?
Well, as Aaron says, it's hopping. there's a lot of theater here. It's hard to talk about the theater scene in Chicago, because it was devastated by the pandemic. Chicago theater is mainly small theaters, storefront theaters, small professional theaters, and, of course, they've all been closed. But I come up here, there's, I think Aaron said, three theaters functioning. The paper tells me there's theater going on all over town. It's a hoppin' scene.
Well, you can check out Julius Caesar July 21st through 25th at the North Dakota Heritage Center. Aaron Weichel is Artistic Director for Capital Shakespeare. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
And we've also been visiting with the Julius Caesar Guest Director, Steve Grossman. Steve, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Ashley.
Still to come on Main Street, a preview of the Fargo Air Show. But first, this news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. North Dakota Secretary of State Al Jaeger has approved a petition for circulation seeking to recall Valley City Republican Representative Dwight Kiefert. The chairman of the sponsoring committee seeking to oust Kiefert, Shane Anderson of Valley City, is a fellow Republican and is the party treasurer of District 24, which Kiefert represents. Kiefert says he's not really surprised by the recall effort. Republicans in his district passed a resolution to censure him during a meeting in April. He says the censure and the attempt to now recall him from office is the result of the House vote during the regular session earlier this year to expel Republican Representative Luke Simons, who was accused of threatening and sexually harassing women at the Capitol.
The guys that, you know, are pushing this are just upset that Simonson was voted out because of his, you know, his conduct. And they're claiming he didn't receive due process. But this wasn't a criminal prosecution. This is about the code of conduct to be a legislature, and according to his history and documented conduct, he hasn't been following, you know, the rules.
According to the recall petition, the sponsoring committee said Kiefert has not committed to the standards of the North Dakota Republican Party platform and that a recall of his current term is the only recourse for the voting constituents of District 24. Anderson was unavailable for comment. A proposed settlement has been reached between Xcel Energy and the North Dakota Public Service Commission on an electric rate case. Here's more from Prairie Public's Dave Thompson.
Back in November, Xcel proposed raising rates by $22.2 million, or 10.8%. In March, that was revised to $19.2 million, or 9.6%. Under the agreement, rates would go up by $7 million, or 3.4%. Along with that, Xcel will implement a $15 monthly residential fixed charge. If the agreement is approved, an Xcel customer will see a refund because Xcel's interim rates are higher than the agreement is proposing. That would be, on average, $26 per residential customer and would take effect between 30 and 60 days from the implementation of the final rates. The PSC will hold a hearing on the rate case Thursday. For Prairie Public, I'm Dave Thompson.
And Xcel Energy says it's ready for this week's hot weather. The utility is expecting an increase in electrical demand from its customers in the Dakotas and Minnesota. Xcel is also urging customers to take measures to reduce consumption and lower the load on the grid. Community Relations Director John Marshall says people can draw shades when the sun is out and use only energy-efficient LED light bulbs, which give off less heat than conventional bulbs.
Run your heavier appliances, your washing machine, dishwashers, dryers. Do them only with full loads, run them with full loads and only at night after the heat of the day has dissipated. That really helps to keep the house cooler. It certainly can reduce some of the strain on the grid.
Marshall says using programmable thermostats and ceiling fans can also help. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by AARP North Dakota. Looking for ways to safely stay active, healthy, and informed without leaving home? AARP North Dakota has lots of online offerings. Learn more about the ways you can stay connected to your community at aarp.org/ndevents.
Hi, this is Bill Thomas, Director of Radio here at Prairie Public, and I want to thank you, our members, for all your generous support. Your contributions have not only helped keep the lights on, but added extra meaning to the work we do. And a trusted source for regional news and quality programming in North Dakota and surrounding regions. We're also grateful to our sponsors in the business community, especially those who were able to stick with us during recent challenging economic times, like North Dakota Living and the Moore family. I hope you'll get the chance to thank them too. And when you do, tell them you heard about them on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. During the pandemic, a lot of outdoor nature-based activities took off in popularity. Well, biologist Chuck Laura has been doing it since before it was cool. And in this week's Natural North Dakota, he has an essay about catbirds.
Have you been hearing this bird song this summer? We've been hearing these calls frequently this summer, emanating from a small, thick stand of aspen and shrubs. It sounds like there are several birds in there. But occasionally we get the opportunity to see the source, which is a catbird, or a gray catbird, to be more precise. No doubt some of you recognize the song. North Dakota is home to one species of catbird, the gray catbird. If you're not familiar with the catbird, they're about the size of a long, slender robin in shape, gray with a dark cap and long tail. They can be found across the state and are associated with dense thickets of small trees and shrubs. Catbirds feed on a variety of insects, but also are known to consume a variety of fruits when available. I was surprised to learn recently that, like orioles, they can be attracted to an area by setting out some grape jelly or oranges. Catbirds often nest near the center of dense shrubs and trees in the branches of the trees and shrubs, about 4 feet or so above the ground. The females lay about 3 to 5 unmarked blue-green eggs in the nest, and perhaps 2 broods during the summer months. It's interesting to note that catbirds will break and remove any cowbird eggs deposited in the nest. Robins do as well. So catbirds and robins don't tolerate nest parasitism. But back to the catbird's call. Catbirds, like their close relatives the mockingbirds and thrashers, are known for calls that mimic calls of other birds. Arthur Cleveland Bent, in his Life Histories of Familiar North American Birds, described the catbird singing well, and I quote, "The catbird at its best stands high in the ranks of our American bird singers and pours forth its melody. Phrase follows phrase in rapid succession, and snatches of all the bird songs in the neighborhood appear intermixed with occasional harsh notes, which are given with as much care and finish as the more melodious ones," unquote. So keep your ears open for the calls of the gray catbird. And oh, they do occasionally have a call that's similar to a cat's meow, thus the common name. All these calls, of course, provide some interesting avian music. I'm Chuck Lura.
Natural North Dakota is supported in part by the NDSU Central Grasslands Research Extension Center. Subscribe to the podcast or find past episodes at prairiepublic.org.
This is Capri Cafaro, host of Eat Your Heartland Out. We are spotlighting the contributions of Southern European immigrants to the culinary landscape of the American Midwest. We are focusing on the old world influences of Italian and Greek communities.
Eat Your Heartland Out, coming up Tuesday night at 8 Central, 7 Mountain on Prairie Public.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. The Fargo Air Show is coming up this week. Retired Major General Mike Haugen is an organizer of the Fargo Air Show, and he visits with Prairie Pulse host John Harris in this excerpt.
General, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, John. Thanks for the invite. But
you're here today to talk about the Fargo Air Show. I know that, and we're excited about that, and a lot going on. But before we do that, tell the folks a little bit about yourself and your background, please.
Well, I grew up in the Valley City area, still have a farm up there, and went to Valley City State and then graduated from Minot State. I started flying at in my high school age and have been a pilot ever since. Flew with the Air National Guard here in Fargo, the Happy Hooligans, ended up as the commander of the Happy Hooligans, and also flew with Frontier Airlines, and ended up as the adjutant general, retired from the military as the adjutant general for the state of North Dakota. So I've been around airplanes and air shows my whole life.
Fargo Air Show is back.
It is.
July 24th and 25th. How did you get, and when did you get started?
I was in the Air National Guard, and the Air National Guard had sponsored a couple of air show open houses as military organizations. And then Dick Wallstead, my co-chair, was involved in organizing a civilian/military air show. And we actually were incorporated back in, I believe it was 1986, and I'm one of the original signers. We're a 501c4 organization, so we're a charity, and if we are lucky enough to earn any money at the air show, we use, as Dick says, we use kind of a strange business model. We give it away, and so over the years we have given, almost $600,000 back to the community. We donate money to the Fargo Air Museum. We've donated money to the Roger Maris Cancer Center, Sanford, and numerous, numerous charities around the community.
Yeah, of course, last year, due to COVID, the air show was canceled. Probably a big disappointment, but can you talk about that and how all that transpired and what happened?
Well, actually, last year there were numerous shows canceled, but we have normally done a show every other year. And last year we were not scheduled, and we were lucky we weren't because there were so few air shows. Matter of fact, in talking with performers to line up this year's air show, several of them said if they do not have a show this year, they're going to sell their airplane and quit the business. So I think we're finding it's just the opposite. There are numerous shows that we know have been canceled, but those that are a little later in the season, like ours is, the end of July, 24th and 25th, the excitement is there, and it also varies state by state. There are some shows that you would have thought would happen in California that are not. The Midwest, there are a lot of air shows that are happening, and I think it's a difference in how different states treat the COVID lockdown.
Yeah, seems like it's going to be a great show. Looking at your flyer and talking about it here, but were you happy to see the CDC, of course, guidelines changing? I mean, come on, in January, I didn't think I would be able to get a vaccination until about now, you know, June or July, and yet I was able to get it in March.
Yeah.
So vaccinations happened a lot quicker. And so has that just made it even easier to have this event?
It has. Back when we were first really worried about whether we could actually put on a show or not, we did some background study, and we had some volunteers from the state, from UND School of Medicine, and from County Health here in Fargo do an analysis, and they looked at what was going on at the time with vaccinations. They explored. Well, your event is all outside. That's the number one good thing. It'll be later in the season when it's warmer. So that's a second good thing. They basically said, in studying all of the factors, we think you should not have an issue putting on a show. We also said, we want another analysis by you in June. Of course, looking at CDC guidelines, just like you mentioned, the Department of Defense guidelines are, of course, we have DOD areas out at the airport. They have been relaxed, but we're still going to do some precautionary measures. We've looked at how much square footage we have. We have 32 acres that's fenced in for the air show. So we can put, including social distancing, we can put about 60,000 people in that area. Well, we've never had 60,000 people. Well, we do run 20,000 per day, 25,000, and we still have plenty of room to spread out.
Tell us about what's going to happen at the air show this year. What do you have?
Well, the headliners are the Blue Angels. And the Blue Angels are back again for, I don't remember how many times, I think about 11 times now we've had them. And this year is really quite unique for a couple of reasons. The main one is that the boss, the commander, is Lieutenant Commander Brian Kesselring. Now, Brian is a Fargo South High School graduate. He's a Concordia graduate. And he attended, with his father, Kurt, the air show in 1986. And at that air show, the boss was Gil Rude from Portland, North Dakota. And Brian looked at the Blues, pointed them out, and said, "Dad, someday I'm going to do that." And lo and behold, this year he is doing that. So he will be here as the boss. So it's really great to welcome the Blues, and especially their new commander, because he's a local boy.
Can you talk about the precision and the training required to fly those planes?
Certainly. The Blues fly a tighter formation than a normal military pilot. When I used to fly the F-16 or the F-4, we'd fly with 3 feet of wing spacing. Okay, so you could move up and down. The Blues normally fly with 18 inches of wing spacing. And they even joke once in a while, sometimes we exchange paint, which means they bump. The maneuvers that they fly are designed for the show, of course. But they are also basic air-to-air maneuvers that all the military pilots who fly fighters use and do. So it takes a lot of experience to get to the point of being asked to be on the Blue Angels and or the Thunderbirds, either one. And the precision and the capabilities of the airplane is what is the demonstration teams try to relay to the crowd and say, this is what your Navy does, this is what your Marine Corps does, or this is what your Air Force does. Mm-hmm. So it's
Can you talk about some of the other planes people will see? Obviously, the Blue Angels are fighter jets, but there's all kinds of restored planes.
There are. We have some unique ones. We have a couple of brothers in Valley City called the Lindemann brothers. Okay, so there's Paul and Jared Lindemann. They fly three different airplanes in the air show. So they will fly a Stearman, a World War II trainer, and they do an act with that. They fly a Pitt Special, and then they have a 1939 Waco, which is a biplane with a big radial engine. But this Waco is unique. It also has a jet engine on the bottom. So they're going to fly that, and Rad Aerosports out of Valley City is one of our main sponsors this year. And then for the first time ever, Jeff Bourbon, who flies a Yak, it's a very unique airplane because it's two airplanes stuck together. What he did is he cut the wings off and put these two, and it's a Russian airplane, Russian trainer with a radial engine. So he put these two airplanes together to make a twin engine aerobatic airplane, and then decided, like the Lindemann's with Rad Aerosports, I need more power, so I'm going to hang a jet engine on the bottom of mine too. So these two are going to do a dual act, and then they're going to premiere that act here and then go to Oshkosh, the big EAA fly-in. So we have a Valley City connection. Now, Jeff Bourbon went to UND flight school. And then we have two F-35, Marine Corps F-35s coming in, also flown by a UND graduate. And he's an active duty Marine, so they're coming in. And then we have Kent Peach from Minot. So we have a good North Dakota bunch of performers here, so it'll be a great local show. And then we have some other airplanes that are unique. I also want to get into an education piece that we've really never had before. Mm-hmm. And that is we have a STEM program for science, technology, mm-hmm. engineering, and math. And we have a local group of students who do robotics. They're going to put on a demonstration. We have an Air Force recruiting booth that has virtual displays in it. So kids can go up and see a TV screen. It's interactive. They can change tires on a C-130. They can fix a hydraulic leak on an airplane. So it's not just about flying, but it's all the other aspects of that. And we're going to have UND will be down with some of their airplanes. And then North Dakota State University is going to be in place. So we're gonna offer educational things for kids, not just watch the airplanes, but actually hands-on and see what type of careers you might like to have in aviation.
Sure, General, so much going on. It sounds great. But how many people, volunteers, does it take to put this air show on?
Oh, my. We have the best committee ever. We have 70 volunteers on this committee, and it's an established committee. Everybody in that committee has their niche. And so to be the co-chair is just an easy job because everybody does their part. So we have everything from someone worrying about setting up tents, tables, chairs, to porta potties, to garbage, to transportation, to marketing. And all we get to do is, how's your area? How's your area? And they're, oh, we're doing great.
So. Is the air show safe? You know, some people, with all the activity, with all the planes, is...
Yes. Well, let me tell you that we have only had really tiny, minor injuries. Most of those have been people tripping on the tarmac or something like that. But what we do is each year before an air show, we have the complete safety review and we have an accident plan in place. The fire chief at the airport conducts a tabletop exercise with all the fire departments and all the law enforcement agencies who are involved. So we are prepared if anything happens. And I might also mention in bringing up law enforcement, this year there's going to be some road construction. University on the east side of the airport is being reconstructed. So there will be some traffic delays. And, of course, 19th Avenue is shut down for the aerobatic box for people to fly in. So the FAA does not allow any driving in that box. So if you come to the air show, plan on a little bit slower traffic that day.
Okay. Well, with that said, I understand you have a family pass. Can you talk about the tickets?
Yes. Well, you know, we looked at ticketing, and we've tried to figure out what would someone want that we aren't offering. So this year we're offering a mom and dad and two kids, and you can go online to the FargoAirShow.com to buy all your tickets. And you can buy them in advance, and it's cheaper if you buy them ahead of time. And we've had very good response so far, so don't delay too long. But that was one of the things that we thought, you know, to get more families out there, we should offer that. So we're doing that this year.
Well, what kind of crowds do you expect this year, especially with COVID?
I think we're probably going to have 30,000 people out here this year. So, going to be a great show. And we also have some ground acts. So you have to get into the area to see the ground acts. We have to stop the show when the airlines land and take off. So we have motorcycle jumpers again. We've got a jet truck that has three jet engines on it. It goes 300 miles an hour and a half mile. And so you're going to see a lot of smoke and fire.
Boy, there's so much going on. I'm glad you got to those ground shows. But if people want more information, where can they go? Who can they contact?
Yeah, FargoAirShow.com. And air show, we dropped the W off it. It's just like Fargo. There's no W in Fargo. So there's no W in air show. And you can find our ticketing. You can find the latest on COVID. You can find the latest.
Well, best of luck to you. Thank you for joining us today.
That was our John Harris visiting with retired Major General Mike Haugen, one of the organizers of the Fargo Air Show. You can watch all episodes of Prairie Pulse on our YouTube channel. Dakota Datebook is next.
Support is provided by St. Benedict's Health Center in Dickinson, where health, independence, and choice come to life through skilled nursing care, short-stay rehabilitation care, residential assisted living, and home services. A member of the Benedictine Health System, st-benedicts.org.
Jennifer Bosson was in college when she first noticed something odd about her male friends.
And I was like, what do you mean you can't tell if Dave is cute?
They refused to comment on the appearance of other men.
Nobody's going to think you're gay. I really just want to know, do you think his face is attractive?
The daring act of defying gender norms. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for July 19th. Last month, we heard about the triumph of the Salk polio vaccine.
Polio was a dreaded disease that could paralyze and even kill, and children were the most vulnerable. Before a vaccine, little could be done about it. On this date in 1946, North Dakota's worst polio outbreak was beginning. It struck dozens of towns. North Dakota's acting state health officer declared an emergency. He called for preventive measures that included isolating children awaiting diagnosis, adjusting the chlorine content in the water supply and swimming pools, prompt reporting of cases. Hospitals banned visitors. Mothers kept their children away from movie theaters and public gatherings. Soda fountains and restaurants were viewed as major places to catch the virus. After Bismarck's first polio death, the city health officer urged residents to wash all vegetables before eating, use only pasteurized milk. He advised residents to spray for flies and called for people to frequently wash their hands, especially food handlers. In Fargo, a special ward for polio patients soon opened, with money provided by the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, also known as the March of Dimes. A state Supreme Court justice began to raise money through the American Legion for an iron lung for Bismarck, where there was none. Iron lungs were enormous breathing machines. Justice James Morris said, "I will feel in a measure personally responsible if any child dies whose life might have been saved." Local civic organizations did raise enough money to donate 2 iron lungs for the city. As the epidemic grew, Bismarck City Health Officer banned children 15 and younger from movie theaters and pools. With a shortage of nurses, St. Alexius Hospital called for volunteers. In Fargo, to keep quarantined children entertained, WDAY Radio began a telephone quiz program with cash prizes for correct answers. Fair and 4-H events were canceled in Fargo, where the fall school opening was delayed multiple times. Bismarck area residents donated $5,000 for patient care, which was matched by the March of Dimes. One controversial treatment at the time involved wrapping a patient's limbs with hot woolen packs to retrain muscles. In October, the state health officer declared the polio emergency over. 1946 had seen a record 492 cases. 28 people died, most of whom were younger than 20. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Jack Dura. I'm Bill Thomas.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
There are no gun stores in Chicago, but there are plenty of guns.
These are weapons that you have to be trained for in the military, and they're just in the hands of 16-year-olds.
As violent crimes rise in cities across the U.S., law enforcement and federal agents in Chicago are teaming up to target illegal gun trafficking. On the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
That's it for this Monday edition of Main Street. Coming up tomorrow on the show, when Lutheran Social Services of North Dakota closed its doors back in January, that left a big gap in services for refugees and asylum seekers. We're going to learn about the organization that took up much of that work. LIRS, or Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. That's tomorrow on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.